kind of opposed by the initial one. And the second one is our cost on the budget. Those are the two I can do. The last one, I would want guidance also from Advocate Kate Jenkins, whether you have heard anything about the financial management of Parliament here. Because this is our last meeting. If we arrive now, the bill is going to last. That's the situation. This is the last meeting of the Portfolio Committee. Yes.
As you know, I'm very much involved. Good morning. Nice to be back in the committee. The NCOP was scheduled at last week to pass the Financial Management of Parliament Bill yesterday, and it didn't happen. See it on the agenda again for today. Spoke to Neil Bell, who's in charge of, who knows everything about the bills in Parliament, and confirmed that yesterday afternoon it was not passed by the NCOP yesterday. He indicated that he advised them while he'd be arguing to run into difficulties then. And the NCOP meeting, as far as he knows and what he advised me, is that there will be an NCOP plenary sitting today, which will then consider that book. But whether that will now be enough time to come back to the NA remains to be seen. That we didn't talk that much. So that's an issue. That's an issue.
We'll see what to do about the situation, because our last meeting is today and Parliament is arriving tomorrow. So that's the challenge. I mean, NA, the last meeting of the National Assembly is tomorrow. And if they haven't adopted by yesterday, poses a serious challenge. But we'll see what to do about it. Mr. Warren.
Chair, can I just say, on that, if they pass a bill today in terms of their adjustments that they have made, and we don't agree with that, that means that it cannot be passed by Parliament anyway. So obviously we must apply our minds in terms of the feedback that we have now received. And then it's the question whether it's something that we have to do before tomorrow, or whether it must, then obviously the alternative is, you know, when the new Parliament is sitting. And that will obviously be first on the agenda, probably, to deal with.
It would be quite unfortunate if we fail to pass it, because what I've been told, I've been informed that it's only one clause that they are proposing to amend, if I'm correct. It's just where we say joint committee, they want to propose oversight mechanism. So that's just, I'm not sure, but that's what I've heard. That might not be correct. Sorry?
The amendment, correct, Honourable Chair, that where there's a joint committee that's just been changed to the name Oversight Mechanism, that was one. So then the functions of the joint committee. There was a big discussion in the committee itself about the functions to consider drafts. The bill specifically says consider drafts of the strategic plan, performance plan, and annual budget and annual adjustment budget of Parliament. But the bill also says that the executive authority will oversee the preparation of those. So the question that arose is, why would these drafts be referred to the joint committee, who's actually, in terms of the bill, responsible for overseeing the implementation of the budget? Why must the drafts also be sent for consideration there? It appears that the joint committee will then be both finalizing the draft budget as well as doing oversight of it. So that split those functions and taken those functions out of the ambit of the joint committee, and that's now within the executive authority how they prepare the budget. So that's another amendment that was made. And another, which I would regard a smaller amendment, was the functions of the accounting officer that was visited by criminal sanction. That's clause 7 of that bill. And the two of those functions include sending your senior management for financial management training and having a performance management system. So the feeling in the committee was that those cannot be enforced by criminal sanctions, by the criminal sanctions. So those have been removed as well. And that's it, as far as I'm aware.
Chairperson, thank you for the promotion. The other thing that I've picked up is very important to me, and that is the timelines. Maybe that. Pardon? Oh, that's the other.
Yeah.
That was just an informal briefing on the financial management of Parliament. Let's proceed. Miss Maggi. There are two issues that we are dealing with today, the money bills amendment procedure and the latest metals bill, and the report of the portfolio committee, and then after that would also assist the joint budget committee to deal with their own report. Mr. Jenkins, I don't have to do a lot of introductions and whatever. Can you take us through what the NCOP has proposed?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The two major amendments and then some amendments to the timelines in the bill were made. The first major amendment is the provision for norms and standards for provinces. That caused an amendment to the long title to insert their norms and standards for amending money bills before provincial legislatures. It also caused a new clause to be inserted in the bill to provide for norms and standards for provincial legislatures, and then it's scheduled.
Do all members have this ATC? Okay, let's take it through slowly. Okay, that's page 328. Yeah. So when you say the long title, Advocate Jenkins, are you referring to the one on well, page 2 of our bill? Okay,
that's right. Perfect. So that will now read to provide for a procedure to amend money bills before Parliament, and for norms and standards for amending money bills before provincial legislatures. So that will go in there, and it's comparable to our financial management of Parliament bill, which then in the long title also refers to the norms and standards for provinces. Consequential to that amendment, if I can say, I'll jump to page 329 of the ATC. There one sees the new clause at the top of the page. Well, the second hidden page. New clause, norms and standards for provincial legislatures. Very similar to the financial management of Parliament book. Page 329 of the ATC. I'm dealing with this. If it's in order, I'm dealing with this into the categories of amendments. One is the provinces, rather than going through it bit by bit. If you wanted to go through as it's numbered on the ATC, that's easier. I can do that too. Okay. So we've done the long title. The second amendment, clause 4. Clause 4 provides for the establishment of the committees and then the functions of those committees. Now, in line 18, there's an omission. The proposed amendment is to omit division of revenue bill. That will, or that facilitates what the select committee felt, that the division of revenue bill has a procedure in Parliament. We don't have to provide an additional procedure for it. So they want to, they propose to remove the specific referral of the division of revenue bill. They say that will be still there in terms of the rules. That being so, they're not removing the provision or the structure of the bill to say you can only amend money bills after you've adopted the division of revenue bill. That is still there. So one will find the division of revenue bill elsewhere in the bill. You can only amend the money bill after the adoption of the fiscal framework and the division of the adoption of the division of revenue bill.
Can you shed some light on the procedure, the current procedure for dealing with the division of revenue bill? You say it's contained in the rules.
Well, in general terms, Honourable Chair, in general terms, the division of revenue bill is introduced in the National Assembly, it's then referred to the committee, passed, and referred to the NCOP, and then goes to the Select Committee on Finance there. Yes. Select committee felt that we don't want to actually provide for additional or a different procedure on that. So there's an issue. I mean, this committee, if I recall, if my memory serves me correct, said, no, we want to establish that in legislation, we want to fix that in legislation. So that's the difference between the two committees, between the two houses of legislation.
we'll come back to it. Let us go through the issues that have been raised by the NCOP. Then we'll have to discuss everything as speculated. So.
Thank you, Chair. The next amendment is in clause 8. It's on page 6 of the bill. That is to do with timelines. In line 26, there's a provision that the committees must, within 16 days after tabling the national budget, submit the reports to the NA and the NCOP. That's now on the adoption of the fiscal framework. The select committee felt these are also submissions that were made to it. The 16 days is too short to consider the fiscal framework and to report on it, and to have public hearings on it. Also too short for civil society to engage with it and to report on it. So they suggest to make that, or propose to make that, within 50 days. They must report within 30 days. If I am allowed, I can jump. Obviously a similar amendment now has to be made to subclause 7, 8 section, or clause 8 sub 7, which says the houses must consider those reports within 16 days after tabling of the national budget. One must, of course, amend that now as well. So the committee must report within 30 days, both committees, and then the houses must consider that report during, in that same time, within the 30 days. The other amendment to the timelines on page 6 of the bill, it's in line 49, that provides that the Minister of Finance must give in at least 2 days to respond to the report of the committee. Select committee felt that is too short, and they've extended that to 7 days, at least 7 days. Honourable Chair, the amendment after that is in clause 9, page 7 of the bill, that has to do with the procedure for the passing of the Division of Revenue Bill. Select Committee wants to omit the whole of clause 9 and make consequential amendments to the numbering, I suppose. The next amendment proposed is on clause 12, page 9 of the bill. In line 46, once again, where the Minister of Finance is given 2 days to respond to the report on the National Adjustments Budget, to extend that to 7. Clause 12, sub 9. Line 46. Line 54, similar amendment. To substitute 4 for 7, and on page 10 in line 14, the same. The Minister must give at least 4 days, I want to give it 7 days. That all has to do with the National Adjustment Budget. Honourable Chair, then the next amendment is to the Parliamentary Budget Office, which has been a proposed substantial amendment. The Select Committee felt that they do not want to create a budget office independent of the Parliamentary Administration. So they're proposing to bring it back to say the Secretary of Parliament must establish this budget office, and meaning, of course, that the Budget Office will report to the Secretary to Parliament. The functions are still the same, but then all the provisions pertaining to the establishment, the selection of the people, the appointment of the director, provisions for removing the director, the budget to be transferred from Parliament's budget, etc., etc., is proposed to be removed. And to bring all of that in line with whatever Parliament administration will then provide. It will be fit within the Parliamentary administration. It won't be an outside agency or something similar to that. National Assembly set out in the bill when it passed the bill the first time. The Next amendment is pertaining to the norms and standards. It's just the insertion of a new clause which says that provincial legislatures must adhere to the norms and standards for amending money bills set out in the schedule, and then the schedule provides for all the principles. And those principles all come out of the bill. One sees there that, first of all, the purpose of the money bill to give effect to resolutions on oversight is there. The fact that any amendment must still comply with your adopted fiscal framework and division of revenue bill adopted by Parliament. The issues which used to be a fiscal responsibility clause that's found in 8.5, that is set out in point B there. The principles pertaining to amending revenue bills found in clause 11.3, that's set out in C. The general issues of facilitating public involvement and allowing the Minister of Finance, or now your member of the Executive Council responsible for financial matters, excuse me, Honourable Chair, those are set out in D. Provinces will therefore also have to find timelines and allow comments from the Minister or the MEC and have public input on those. And then the issues of what must be in the committee report proposing amendments to a money bill, that's found in clause 10.10 of the bill. We find that in point E of the schedule. Those are, if you recall correctly, indicating to the House how you've taken into account your public accounts committee's resolutions, your resolutions on your section 32 reports in terms of the PFMA, and so on. The specific ways of amending a bill, namely to do a, to provide for a conditional appropriation, that's in F, and such a resolution would also require specification of the conditions that need to be met before the provincial legislature may resolve to release the funds in terms of your conditional appropriation. And an appropriation for a specific and exclusive purpose, that's also in there on G. The 4-month timeline that we find in 10.7 of the bill, that is set out in H. And your technical amendment or your power to make or to propose a correction to a money bill by the Minister and this time by the NEC, that's set out in I, the last point. And then there's just consequential amendments to the memorandum, to the bill. That's it, Chair. Thank you very much.
Members, I would request your guidance. My personal view is that we should start with the long title, have discussion and agree on the long title, and move down with other issues. Is that agreed? Okay, Dr. Mr. Singh.
I think our chairman is going to become a doctor soon. That's why he's using doctor to everybody.
No, you're sitting between your doctor.
Thanks. Chair, yeah, no, you know, although in the beginning we said that there are few amendments, I mean, there are a number of amendments here. And, you know, I would like to think that when our committee sat, we had members of the NCOP here, but I'm not denying the right of the NCOP to propose any amendments. I mean, it was in their right to do that. But you know, we went to a very, very detailed discussion on this, and we applied our minds to the days and time frames and got so much of advice on it. And now, I mean, these changes come to us now, and for us to be expected just to consider them, you know, in 30 minutes or even today, so that we can pass it, it's putting a tall order on our committee, I believe. I mean, it's not one or two words, it's lots of things, it's principles that are involved here, not just amendments to words and things like that. I don't know, Chair, if we have the luxury of time to really deal in detail with all these amendments, or whether there's need for, in terms of our rules, to get a joint a committee from both houses to sit and look at this, and when the Finance Committee comes back next year, the first thing on their plate must be this.
Chairperson, I mean, I can only concur with that and support that view, because in my view there's quite substantial changes that has been brought in. I remember very clearly how we have debated the whole issue of time, the 4 months, that, you know, that everything must be done within 4 months, and how we have worked back from 4 months to say, you know, and I remember that we have argued and debated this little time available. But it was also made clear at that stage that, you know, what is the alternative? We have to fit everything in a specific time that is prescribed. Now, we cannot go and pass a bill on the assumption that that will be changed. So in other words, if we have got more than 4 months to pass everything, then yes, one can consider this. But currently, we are limited and restricted in terms of that. So if you, for instance, give at least 30 days to one phase, then you know you'll have to compromise on others to be able to sort of fit it in within. Now, you know, is that sensible? I must admit, no, it doesn't sound to me. The whole issue of independence, and I remember how we went to the Constitution, and there was interpretations in terms of the instructions that the Constitution gives us, or the mandates, and how that must be independent. The whole issue of the Revenue Committee and the Appropriation Committee, and to take away that passing of the Division of Revenue Bill, is just in my view that is quite substantial, and we must be afforded the time to apply our minds to this, and really, I mean, if they were. And this is maybe a criticism to them. If they wanted to make so many changes or propose so many changes, it must have, you know, be back with us at least in January, because then we would have more than enough time to really consider and change these things. I certainly don't think. And the other thing, Mr. Chair, these norms and standards for provincial legislatures, was this proposals from the NCOP, or was this, does this come back from the provinces itself? Thank you.
Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Chairperson. Look, I was about to say one of the things that I was impressed with was the laws and standards for the provinces, which seems to be the last point that was made. I think when it comes to that kind of thing, perhaps the National Assembly may have overlooked something, and then the NCOP dealing on a week-to-week basis with the provinces may bring it in. There's a lot of precedent for norms and standards and Treasury at a national level. So it's not an unusual, it's not a precedent by any stretch. That's the first point. And I think when it comes to norms and standards, the issue is really, is it going to in some way subordinate the province's governance, if you like, government? And those are the issues that the provinces will always bring up across the board. The second question is also then that to note that Treasury finances one of these peculiar areas where it seems to be both based on a unitary system and then some other form of system, decentralization. So, but I do think the norms and standards would not encroach, but perhaps members from the NCOP who may be sitting here may be able to shed light on why, on whether or not provinces are consulted. But knowing them, I'm sure provinces were. But Chair, I wanted to come in on the days. You see, there are a lot of references to days, and in some of them it's arguable that they may benefit us. But there are one or two areas, Chairperson, where there doesn't seem to be any reason, because I'm referring in particular as an example to Clause 8, Line 49, where the proposal is to change that to 7. But the point is, it says here, the minister must be given at least, which means he can be given 20 days. It simply says at least. He can be given 40 days. The law says simply at least. So why change it to 7? Because we can make it 7 in practical terms. Doesn't need to be written in. But by the same token, when you put the 2 in, what was the point of the 2? We would have had a reason for that. But it's not going to mean if something requires a change, it can't be extended. There are other areas where it's not that flexible on the time, and that is clause 8 again, line 26, I think, where it says 16, because the time frames are very clear within. And the question would be, with the NCOP bringing it here, they were talking of the committees, meaning, of course, committees that would include the NCOP, both Houses of Parliament. And, Chairperson, perhaps we can just clarify that with yourself, so that you may give us further insight.
Thank you. Members, I think we should take note of one critical issue when dealing with this bill. I'll go back to the issue that has been raised by Mr. Murray and Mr. Singh. There was a time frame that we were working within, and we went through the bill step by step to ensure that whatever days we are proposing here should fit within that time frame. And I tend to agree with them. It's going to be a challenge to tamper with this day, and then you end up working outside that time frame. My humble submission to this committee would be to adopt, to retain the days that we propose, because this bill is not yet implemented. Then with implementation, people can amend if they feel that it's constraining them in any way. Otherwise, my fear is that if you tamper with the day, that time frame is also going to be, you know, going to be messed up in a way. That's my proposal. That because I don't see how this day fit within it. If we're given a diagram of say, if you propose the following 30 days, this is what's going to happen. But that diagram is not there, and that's what we're going to do. My submission is that we should retain the day. During the implementation of this bill, if there are any constraints, they can be addressed. Is that agreed to them? This is going to be a very short meeting. Now, I have to I use my discretion. The NCOP had a time to be buried on this thing, but I'm not barring from you from speaking, but okay, talk.
No, thank you very much. I think that you're right, maybe having reservations whether I should comment on this matter or not. It's really up to you. But colleague has indicated that there's JPC within this, there's everything within this collective. So you will inform us where you think that we may comment or not comment. But all that I was...
I have to clarify, you had an opportunity to deal with the matter as the NCOP. We dealt with it as an NCOP, and you dealt with it as an NCOP. I'm not saying that you can't participate, but I'm just saying be mindful of what the time frames that we agreed upon. And if the diagrams were not provided to us, it becomes very difficult to go with anything, with any proposal of any date.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the concern that is raised is a genuine concern. However, just the worry is that if there is no decision, there are implications. If there's no decision before we go to elections on this deal, there will be implications. So I think that then maybe what could be done as the NCOP, when we look at these amendments, I mean, there were
other amendments that we considered, but that we thought that they might be substantial amendments, and therefore, even though this one is, and therefore we thought that these were, in our consideration, were minor amendments that could be agreed upon. As for this one, exactly, it was the issue of the concern that we're having, was the issue of time frame. Because once we legislate time frame and we're not able to keep to those time frames, it can create a chaos in terms of legislation. So that's why we're saying, let's make some room to maneuver. So hence, then we came with this, as we saw that the 2 days that were there originally don't necessarily bind the minister. What if the minister is not in a position to respond within 2 days? It means that, therefore, we must come back and talk to them. But if there's a room to maneuver, then the committee can, what you call it, always, I mean, the minister can always have some, the committee can always have some discretion. I think that's what we were talking about here. I do understand the sense that maybe there are no notes that are accompanying this. And I think that perhaps what could be done, as well as a concern that was raised, the fact that people have just received this, I mean, it is a concern. But maybe what could be done is to come up with a, what is this committee called? Committee that would look at this, subcommittee that would look at this, and then bring it back to the full committee. Thank you.
I hear your submission, Honorable Member. But you are also working within time constraints. The last meeting of Parliament is tomorrow, and we have to take a decision on this matter. And my recommendation submission was that we have not yet moved into the phase of amending money bills. Possibly this is going to be done by, I'm not sure, later during the course of the year or next year. I would recommend that we adopt the time frame that has been indicated here. And if there are any constraints, let the committees amend. I mean, Parliament has got the right to amend this thing. But the problem I have is that we're working with certain time frames. Let me use a practical example. We're saying the passing of the budget should be done in 90 days. And all these 2 days and whatever, we're fitting in within that time frame of 90 days. So if you then propose 30 days, we are working beyond that 90-day time frame. That's my submission. Maybe I was not quite clear. When we passed this budget, I mean this bill, we said, fine, this is what we need. This thing would need 90 days for us to process. We go through it one stage at a time. Fiscal framework would take 7 days. I'm just giving you an example. Division of revenue would take another 14 days. So if you added all those things together, they put you within the 90 time frame. But once you come with additional days, it's outside that scope, outside that time frame. And that's our major difficulty. So, and hence, my proposal is that we should adopt this date that's proposed initially. And if Parliament encounters challenges, they can amend. Mr. Dean.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. No, I want to agree with you, Chair. Because I think when we started with this bill, we said it's a precedent, it's something new, it's been a long time coming, it was not there. And I think we all knew that this is work in progress. And the implementation of this bill, the date of implementation, is going to be decided upon. We haven't stipulated the date of implementation. And like you say correctly, if there's need, you know, to change dates for very, very good reasons, then that can be done. I mean, this is not cast in stone. The bills and acts can be changed. But I think we had a responsibility as this committee to try and make sure that before the rise tomorrow, whenever we rose, that we have a bill on we have an act in place that can get consented to by the President. So I would suggest that we, to the our NCOP colleagues, that we leave it as it is and let's just see how it goes.
Members, can we move to the next
issue? The next
big issue is the division of revenue. The argument from the NCOP side was that this, the division of revenue should be removed, the procedure should be removed, because it's already contained in the rules of parliament. I want your comment, but at that stage, we had our own argument that we want to formalize the process in law. Members, can I have your comment, please? Mr. Mgun.
Thank you. I think another thing we need to look at the cost, the whole cost of additional revenue. It also needs that committee to look into the additional revenue so that they can see what's allocated to their committees and how it's going to affect the whole budget.
To the market.
Yeah. Oh. The division of revenue as well, so that committees have also had to look at it. And also from our part, you know, the finance minister has always been saying that we just pass the division of revenue and we don't look at it, of which it affects us. So if we just that we take out this source, then we are leaving that responsibility, you know, to the NCOP, of which it's also our oversight responsibility to do. And also linked to it, all those type frames that you put in there, it also includes this new revenue, you know, how do we handle it. So I'll propose that it just be the
That's the proposal, but I would want to motivate it further. If you look at section 9, subclause 6, subsection 6, I hope I'm using the right terminology. The report of the respective committees on appropriation must at least indicate whether the effects of the proposed amendment on the total national, provincial and local government equitable and conditional grant allocations in terms of the bill are consistent with the adopted fiscal framework. I'm sure this is not contained in the current rules. B. Motivate the amendment in terms of the service delivery improvement. That can't be contained in the current rules. C. Demonstrate that the impact of the amendments has been taken into account in respect of the service delivery obligations of all affected departments, provinces and local governments. Honourable members, I would also submit that we retain the division of revenue bill and let the process be formalised. Mr. Murray.
Chief, I will agree you, I will support you 100% in that regard. We will remember that we have had long discussions and debates around the relevance and the importance of having the two committees and the role of the two committees, and these were part of this. Irrespective of whether it's been another part of the bill has been written in, it's also to give guidance to those committees. And I think there was very, very good arguments at that stage and why we have adopted that. So I will absolutely fully support you that we retain that section as well.
Ms. Watts?
Look, I must say on the one hand, I can hear where the NCOP was coming from. It's not money bill per se, and it's in the rules. But the critical point about the division of revenue when we discussed this at length in that process was this issue of, even as we sit here, there have been problems with respect to service delivery obligations of the affected department. Indeed, this has occurred. There's also various amendments of other parts of the money bill. We must remember that. Here you would have a direct line from the amendment that you may wish to make with respect to an allocation. You would need to take this legally and seriously into account through a money bill process as to whether this has a negative impact on the division. So I think, if anything, it protects and enhances effective service delivery. But I think that I can't remember all the arguments that were put forward in the National Assembly at that time, but certainly that was one of them.
Members, I think we need to move speedily to the other issues. The other big issue that we have, yeah, I think we will further it. The other big issue that we have to deal with the budget committee. Budget office, sorry, not the budget committee. Mr. Hanna.
You know, Chair, when you're dealing with the division of revenue, it means you must deal with a whole range of things. The whole, in fact, I'm surprised that you're saying this, you're formalizing the process. Precisely because it is formal, and it also takes place in the provinces. And so if we then have to deal with that in that context, in other words, tampering with the current procedure and process as it stands, it then means we must also take those issues in account that relate, and this is why we were also saying, for now, leave the whole division of revenue bill procedure as is until we've then gone back and dealt with how and whether provinces then would be ready with the new proposals that are put on the table in respect of what we're raising. And so clearly, until we've dealt with that, you don't want to disadvantage provinces in respect of the procedure of dealing with the division of revenue bill. Thank you.
My co-chair, Ms. Mabi.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know on how many occasions the Minister of Finance has been, I wouldn't want to say reprimanded, but cautioning the National Assembly that we are ignoring our responsibility to look at the division of revenue first. He's made that call on several occasions. I think for this time it was even worse. That every time he would say, but why are you not taking your responsibility to look at the division of revenue? And I thought that this bill was assisting us and ensuring that the National Assembly takes its responsibility so that all spheres of government, both the National Assembly, the NCOT, and the province will take up this responsibility. So if we do not include this section, I think we'll be compromising on other spheres of government, like I'm saying, especially at the legislature level. Thank you.
Members, any other comments? Ms. Fox.
There's something that is outside of, you know, the tool you're dealing with, Chairperson, tool is not. But there's a reference to the division of revenue. I think it's in clause 10. Can't remember.
The reference to yeah, no, the reference to division of revenue in clause 10 is section 10. Subsection 3.
Oh, okay. You see, when I look at that,
and four.
It in fact supports the concept that I believe some of our comrades and colleagues are pursuing very strongly in respect to the provinces, because actually making the reason I referred to that one, which I remember coming up, is because it was considered a check and a balance. You know, once you've allocated the revenue and you've divided it, surely there should be no tinkering around so that you dislodge the principal thrust of that budget. That doesn't impact negatively on issues like hearing processes that are important through the provinces. In fact, those processes have the full protection, if you like, of the law by saying that you guys can amend that appropriation, but you're not going to be allowed to cut our resources. You can add to them, but not cut. And I think that's a very important issue in terms of the provinces and the allocations, and even local governments.
Yeah, I think the point is well made, because our intention in any way is not to interfere with the process that the NCOP is engaged with when they deal with provinces around this issue. I don't see any clause that would have that would be interfering with that. So if there are any other issues that really interferes with the NCOP and their powers, I think that has to be indicated. But as things stand, Ms. Fatsch has articulated that quite clearly. Members, I propose that we move on. The next big issue that we have to talk about is the Parliamentary Budget Office. Any comments? Mr. Marais?
Chair, again, I think, you know, again, we I remember very clearly that we had long and very thorough discussions and arguments around that. And I know that the Minister of Health was still a member of that committee at that stage, Barbara Hogan. And there was absolutely, and I think it was an absolute thorough process at that stage. And I know also we and the Advocate can maybe help me with that, but there was a strong argument why it need to be independent and need to be assistance to these committees, and that they must not fall under the line function of the secretary. So in other words, then you are to a certain extent judge and referee. Or you know, you player and referee at that, you know, in terms of the secretary, and that might compromise the independence and the objectivity of that budget office. And I can clearly remember that we have said that this budget office, its primary function is to assist these committees, can also make the time available as at other committees, but it must assist these two committees. Now, if they fall under the secretary, most certainly you're compromising their objectivity. So I'm of the opinion that in our initial decision, I still support very strongly. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Singh?
Thank you, Chair. I concur with my colleague, because we looked at models of other countries as well, and we looked at the US model, US of A, I mean, which is long tested and tried, and there the independence was something that was really made very clear. The independence of the institution of this office, because they can even advise members of parliament. There is provision that if a member of parliament, provided they have the time, they can also give you advice. Totally independent. So I suggest that we retain this.
Members, I must. Okay, Dr. Mr. James.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just a point of clarity on the issue of independence of the budget. I didn't mention it clearly when I made the briefing on the amendments. There's one of the proposed amendments to provide to remove independence in line 45 on page 10. That is, the budget office headed by a director, the main objective which is to provide independent, objective and professional advice. The NCOP is recommending to remove independence there. That independence is, in my opinion, tautologist, because we have objectives there. That independence hasn't to do with the structure, the way I see it, of the office, which is independent from parliamentary service. So that is just something that's an issue. And then the structure itself, I just, you know, the issue of comparing it with the United States, and then looking at what South Africa is, we must just remember, and I would like, that's my piece of advice here, that South Africa's public service constitution is independent politically. We don't have a political bias in our administrative service constitution. And America is the opposite. When we have a new president like we saw now, the whole of the administration gets replaced. They have a politically biased administration. So one must keep that in mind, point one, and point two, when we're looking at the Congressional Budget Office. Remember that the President of the United States makes proposals on the budget, and it's the Congressional Budget Office that drafts the budget. In South Africa, being a Commonwealth system, we have a different system there. But that just goes to the functions and how much this Budget Office will be involved and what capacity it needs to do. But I would want to say that parliamentary service, including myself, who account to the Secretary of Parliament, constitutionally we are independent in terms of politics as well. And if we're not, then surely one can complain to the presiding officers or the chief whips that we're not giving independence.
Thanks, Mr. Jenkins. I think we'll come back to the issue of independence. I think that
two or three critical issues that I want to raise. Firstly, the Secretary of Parliament remains the accounting officer of Parliament. That's clear, and we're not encroaching on his responsibility. All we are doing is establishing a budget office, which has nothing to do with his responsibility. But that budget office, I want to point one issue. When we discussed this issue as members, we said we are more experienced in dealing with issues related to budget, money bills, and whatever. And there's a certain clause which is very important. If we take out that clause, then we render this whole exercise obsolete. One, section 15, subsection 5, which reads as follows. The committees contemplated in section 4 must recommend to the respective houses a person with the requisite experience, qualification, and leadership skills to manage the parliamentary budget office with the functions as set out in 15.2. You can read that on your own. But, I mean, let me address myself to this issue. If you decide to go along with the NCOP amendments or proposal, then you are saying this two committees, the Appropriations Committee and the Finance Committee, has no say in the appointment of that director. That's the first point that we must acknowledge. The second issue that we wanted to state here is that we wanted the budget office where people have confidence in it. You know, it's not based on the wishes or whims or influence of a majority party or any other party. And we said in section 15, subsection 9, the director shall be obliged to report to Parliament any inappropriate political or executive interference to prevent the office from providing independent, objective, and professional advice on matters related to the budget and other money bills. We raise this point because we are saying explicitly that we take the amending of money bills to be a very serious matter. So if then that's not protected, I mean, we're not talking about amending budget of Parliament, we're talking about amending the national budget. That's a major responsibility. And I think we need to take that into consideration. So members, there are a lot of issues. I mean, even to ensure that this person who's appointed can continue to function in an objective manner, you know, providing objective advice. We said in 8, subsection 8, the director may be removed from office only on the following condition. Not because Mr. Mbuni is the chairperson of the Appropriations Committee or Mrs. Mavi doesn't like what this person is saying and say, no, that sounds more like an ideological position and therefore this person must be removed. You know, I mean, this person must give us objective advice, and that the tenure of this person has to be protected. I think those are the critical issues that members must take into consideration. I haven't read them all, but we need to take a decision. One, whether we as members don't want to be involved in the recommendation to the House about the appointment of this person. That's the first issue. Members, any other comments, Mr. Alani?
Chair, I think there's one. We're strong about the involvement of the committees of Parliament in the appointment of any person, by the way, because our own responsibility has to do with oversight. And so we would not want something, if we had appointed somebody, and then this person does not perform. And then the next thing, it is really us who had appointed this. We don't want to be represent players, if you like. That's just the bottom line, that's the first issue. Secondly, we agree with the establishment of a budget office of Parliament. It is an office of Parliament, by the way. And so it should not be outsourced in our view. And having then said that, we are worried about elevating this person to the status of the Secretary of Parliament, because he or she must be appointed on the basis of a resolution of the two houses. And surely, you equating that as only the Secretary of Parliament is appointed on the basis of a resolution of the two houses here. And so we're saying we're creating two centers of power. Inadvertently, we are worried about that ourselves. This independent issue, in fact, we were just thinking in terms of it in the context of this structure being independent from Parliament. Independent advice is fine, it's not a big deal. But this structure for us cannot be independent from Parliament. That's just an issue that really we feel strong about. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just clarify the issues immediately. This structure is not independent from Parliament, it's within Parliament. I think that let's clarify that. It's within Parliament, it's not independent from Parliament. The Secretary of Parliament is only requested to transfer the money to the Budget Office. So that doesn't mean independence from Parliament. Let me come back to using examples. I want to address the issue of two centers of power. The Commissioner of South African Revenue Service doesn't report to the DG of National Treasury. So the DG of National Treasury determines the policy. Tax policy doesn't report to the DG of National Treasury. He reports straight to the minister, and there are no two centers of power because the responsibilities are different. The Commissioner of South African Revenue Service is responsible for collection of revenue, and the DG is responsible for determining the policy, the tax policy. So there are not two centers of power. They are just two different responsibilities. So the Secretary of Parliament is responsible for the administration of Parliament, is the accounting officer of Parliament. But the head of the Budget Office is responsible for giving members of Parliament advice on amending money bills. The two are separate, they are distinct. Let me go further. The Statistician General reports to the Minister through the Statistics Council. And obviously the DG of National Treasury has interest in those issues. But there are no two centers of power. And I think let's be clear. All that we said, we want to recruit the best and remunerate them at a good level. That's because we don't want, I don't want to be seen to be castigating the parliamentary research office. They are doing a good job. But all that we wanted to avoid here is that you don't want to for example, the head of parliamentary budget office remunerated at the level of a deputy director or a director. Where do you get the best? I think for us, that's the main issue. So the two centers of power argument, in my view, doesn't hold. The two centers of power would hold on one condition. If the two are responsible for doing the same thing, then that's a conflict. I mean, that's a recipe for a conflict. But if people are doing two separate things, like I've given the example of the commissioner and the DG, for me, my view is that it doesn't hold. Mr. Murray.
Mr. Chair, I fully support you in that regard. Again, if one looks at the objectives of the Parliamentary Budget Office, it's not in conflict with the tasks of the secretary, because it's not to do with the budget of the secretary. It's a budget office that must assist the two committees in evaluating all money related goals. If you look at those sub clauses 3 to 16, it's very, very critical in terms of the importance that we have given this whole bill. And also the level of director, that emphasizes the importance that we have given to this office and the kind of knowledge and expertise that we want to be vested in this budget office. So and one must read that. So if you read through this, you will see that, you know, there's no conflict with the Secretary of Parliament. I don't pick that up anywhere, because that is not the objective of this budget office. So I fully support you that this must be retained as is.
I have Ms. Fabs, Ms. Mabi, and I have Mr. Valani and Mr. Sogoni. But and Mr. Jenkins, last point before I forget about this issue. The director of the budget office reports to Parliament. So I think we need to put to bed the argument that this thing is outside Parliament. There's transfer of funds to this office, and this person reports to Parliament. You can check it clause subsection 9 and subsection 10. Okay, and 11. That's in that order, Ms. Fabs, Ms. Mali, and then Mr. Alani, Sogoni, and Jenkins. So.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, you know, there are quite a few anomalies. The first thing, of course, is that, yes, consultation of other budget officers was being made, what do they look like, other countries, and yet there's no denying that we have a unique system of governance in our country, unique constitution. And we have a situation in our country which doesn't really exist anywhere else, and which has never ever created, to my knowledge, a major problem yet. That is what we have, two houses of Parliament in which we have a chairperson and a speaker. There is no speaker for Parliament as Parliament. But we do have one person who does have the authority of both houses vested in him or her. That is the Parliamentary Secretary. If you like, the one person that almost links the two houses together. Now, we have found that extremely practical so far, useful, because of that linkage that is provided on an admin level. I'm not aware at this point of problems arising at the chairperson's or the speaker's office in connection with the parliamentary secretary, who has overriding authority on the admin side. And I think it's something we should bear in mind, because that is unique to South Africa. It doesn't happen elsewhere. Secondly, when it comes to the budget office, I think we must be very clear here. Up to now, there have been ideas that the administration will involve at least consult committees in respect of the appointments of certain critical posts. That has never actually happened in practice. Now, I do hear what the NCOP is saying, that perhaps that is essentially one of the core points. They do not wish to involve. They see it as a dangerous element, the involvement of committees in the appointment of such a person. That's how I've understood the point made. However, we have seen just how easy it is to hand this over to a single individual with things like the SABC boards, and I don't know what else is going on in communication. So, you know, there are points for and against here. But clearly, when you've got collective involved, you really are more likely to come out with a more robust decision on the person. So, you know, for me that's quite an important point. The second thing, I really don't want to argue about independence and objectivity. I think the point is made, he must be objective or she must be objective, and it's the independent structure or whatever. So I really don't want to go down that particular route at all. But I think the third point, Chair, that I do want to raise in respect of this office, I know we've constantly raised the issue, well, it's all to do about money. Now, if it's only to do about money, we can pass a clause here now and say you'll be remunerated at this level. We can do that legally. Don't stop us. So I don't believe it is simply only a remuneration clause at all. I don't. I think it comes into this point that has been referred to here about Parliament passing a resolution, that is, if you like, one of the important issues here, that it would be the only post other than the Secretary for Parliament where a resolution from both houses would be required. I understand that to be, if you like, a quite a serious factor in the difference of opinion here. If that is the fact, then I think let us focus on that rather than get cloud ourselves up with anything else. If that's what is at the heart of this matter, then let's look at it.
Mr. Alani and Mr. Sogoni, and then Mr.
You know, Chair, what we were raising here is we don't want to create a monster. There is a monster in this country, in one province, Limpopo, called the Road Agency Limpopo. And that monster is such that, firstly, as you are saying, does not account to the legislature in that province, only accounts to the MEC. In fact, it also does not account to the HOD of that province. And the biggest chunk of that department's budget resides in this monster. Now, part of one of the things we're not addressing it also in this legislation is how do we therefore deal with a dispute that might arise between the Secretary of Parliament and this person that we're talking about here. And so for us, this is a very fundamental issue. I mean, I hear what the other members are saying. I mean, look, I think we should not try and legislate on the basis that so-and-so is in this particular position, etc., etc. But the issue that we must be dealing with here are systems, very strong systems in the structure. And so if we're trying to say because the situation is this situation now, etc., etc., I think we're really making a mistake. My view is that whilst I hear what you are saying, that this is a budget office of Parliament, and so Parliament therefore must work out the nitty-gritties of what it puts in this office. And so we shouldn't, in my view, say one, he or she is appointed on the basis of a resolution, but number two, he accounts to Parliament. Surely he should account to Parliament through the Secretary of Parliament. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Sogoni, we don't personalize issues. You know, let's take out personalities and deal with the issues.
Comrade Chairperson, thanks. I'm reluctant because I think that Comrade Falana really covered me in that in South Africa, for instance, we have made our systems are such that there is an accounting person. In the department, we have created offices of the CFOs and what. But those people, they are very important people, they are very powerful, but they are not made accounting people. I think that maybe at this stage, I see that the section has been retained. Maybe what we could do, I think that maybe we need to move, but I think that note that there is a disagreement, we'll revisit this. I mean, those people who will be back might have to revisit it in the new, what we call the parliament. Because, like Honorable Khalan has indicated, that though the chairperson is of the view that perhaps there are no two centers of power, when the Secretary of Parliament is an accounting officer for Parliament, accounts to Parliament, and Parliament has made, there is a secretary for the National Assembly. There is a secretary for the NCOP, but there's one secretary for Parliament. who takes the overall responsibility for Parliament. In every department, there's an accounting officer, there are directorates under this accounting officer, but the accounting officer will take the final responsibility. So, well, I think that in this situation, let us note that perhaps there is a disagreement, but as you said earlier, that maybe this process is for the National Assembly to decide what they want to do, and then we take it from there. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Sogoni and Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The Budget Office is for reform. That comes from Clause 15 as it is at the moment. One can specifically also see, when it looks at sub 4, it says the Budget, Parliamentary Office, and other research structures of Parliament. So it'll be part, but it's not going to be part of parliamentary administration as we know it today. If one looks at, for instance, the administration of the Parliamentary Budget Office in sub 13, sub 13 A and B, the management decisions about the structure and the conditions of service, those decisions will be taken outside the parliamentary administration. The Secretary of Parliament will not be involved there. The Secretary of Parliament involvement will be to transfer the funds or to make sure those funds are transferred in the approved budget as approved by Parliament. And then in terms of what we're seeing, if that bill goes through the way it is, the financial management of Parliament bill, or even with the amendments of the NCOP, the Secretary is there obligated to make sure that there are proper accounting systems of any funds that it transfers, that he, at the moment, he or she in the future could transfer. Okay, that's where the accountability of the accounting officer would terminate. The rest will then fall upon the director. And the committees and the houses will have to sort that out in plain language. So there's additional management functions that we're putting on committees and on the houses. That's the point that one needs to put down. Honourable Chair, at this point in time, the Parliamentary Service supports the committees that are dealing with financial bills, money bills, division of revenue bills. This bill doesn't want to, it doesn't appear to want to change that, but it does appear to change the research. So the researcher sitting here might be superfluous when this is implemented, because we will have researchers from the Parliamentary Budget Office being paid out of a budget that's been transferred. So Parliament might have to say, we'll have to look at whether maybe some of the researchers helping these committees now must go over to the Parliamentary Budget Office, or we can use them elsewhere, or the committees can still use them. And the Parliamentary Budget Office, in any case, will be primarily responsible to provide research for the committees. Let's say this could be one of those committees. So that is something one will have to sort out. In terms of comparisons, we have the Congressional Budget Office, but we also have the Canadian Parliamentary Budget Office. That's of course part of the Canadian Parliament Library, where all their research capacity lies. That's within their service. So one must just keep that in mind. And the last thing, and this is not trying to chase up ghosts or anything, but it's a legal thing that I'm obliged to advise the committee on. If it doesn't work, let's say we go ahead and we say we want to provide for the management as well as the functions. The NCOP amendments, proposed amendments, are just, let's keep the functions but take away all this infrastructure management part of the book. If we do it the other way around, we say, no, let's keep it there and see if it works. If it doesn't work, then we're still sitting with your labour law issues. Director, deputy director, everybody working for that budget office. What do we do with them? Assuming that there's no space in parliamentary services to transfer them there, one will have to go through a procedure of rationalisation in terms of your Labour Relations Act and Basic Conditions of Employment Act. So that's something to keep in mind. It's not as simple as saying, well, if it doesn't work, we'll just go the other way. We will have this additional problem. Whereas if one says, well, let's put the functions there, let's see how it operates, and feels that is not sufficient, then one can still go and create this additional level where you have committees in law having the power to provide their own support. So that's what I needed to say. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I thought that the example that you gave of the relationship between FARS and the DG of National Treasury, as well as the other that you have mentioned, I thought it was clarifying the matter. But I just want to indicate that it's not our intention to create a monster for Parliament. As Parliament, it's now 15 years that we have not fulfilled the obligation as stipulated in the Constitution. And it is within our right to see to it that we come up with something that will be useful to Parliament and the country at the same time. And it is, in my opinion, that as members of Parliament, we are better placed with the experience that we have, in particular as a finance committee. The experience that we have, we are in a better position to can advise Parliament in terms of how they should, Parliament should approach the matter. But at the same time, Chair, I think when we agreed that we need to have the budget office being independent from not as a privatized agent, but as an independent institution. It was at the same time based on our experience, the committee. To tell the truth, I want to be polite, but to tell the truth, we do not do oversight as expected over the budget, as expected, or as members of the public would expect our broadcast. And this is intended to assist us to move beyond the level where we are. We are doing oversight, but we want to move beyond the level where we are so that we can have people who are independent in thought and advise, you know, Parliament, not, you know, having some constraints. And so that at the same time, they can be held accountable. We appoint them, we have recommended them, who should be appointed. And at the same time, that person must account directly to Parliament. Because Parliament takes the responsibility of amending the money bills to be a serious responsibility and task. And I fully, fully support the fact that we should retain the clause the way it is. To show that we definitely take this matter serious, and at the same time that we do not want to weaken the power that we have as members of Parliament. Because finally, it's not the administration of Parliament that wants the budget office. It's members of Parliament to do better oversight. So those are my comments that I wanted to... But just for emphasis, I don't see the two centers of power. And if there's any conflict between the director and the secretary of Parliament, presiding officers are there, because the budget office is still under administration of Parliament. So the presiding officers will be there to come up and resolve the matters that would be in this seat. Thank you.
Chair, okay, thank you. Just to clarify one or two issues. The budget office is mainly established to support the appropriations committee and the finance committee. That's what is in the legislation. If you check, I'm sorry, it says the core, the 15, section 15, subsection 2, it says the core function of the parliamentary budget office is to support the implementation of this act by undertaking research analysis for the committees referred to in section 4. So, and the Section 4 committees are these two committees, the Appropriations Committee and the Finance Committee. And the point that I want to clarify is that the research division of parliament still remains separate from the budget office. They can cooperate. The director is responsible for establishing the office, employing new people who, in his or her opinion, are capable to help the director to fulfill the responsibility. And so I think that has to be clarified. It shouldn't create any confusion. And that the two appropriations committee will discuss with the director the structure and agree about the structure. The second issue, I think my co-chair has clarified that. But I just want to agree with Mr. Jenkins and extend it further. That the Secretary of Parliament, when transferring the money to the budget office, would have to establish all of their systems in place and procedures. And also, I think according to the Financial Management of Parliament Bill, if the money is not being spent properly, the Secretary of Parliament has the powers to withdraw the money, withdraw the transfer of money. So the Secretary of Parliament has got the powers to regulate the flow of funds to that office. Not to be an obstacle towards performance, but to ensure that the public funds are spent properly. I think those powers are still residing with the Secretary of Parliament. I just wanted to clarify that. If there's any other dispute, I think the dispute between the two can arise mainly on that one issue, the flow of funds. And the Secretary of Parliament has a last say if the money is not being spent properly. Because he's the accounting officer, he must account for those transfer funds, whether he in short, according to the Financial Management of Parliament Bill, those systems are in place. I think that has to be clear. Mr. Swart and Mr. Galani and Ms. Fabs.
Thank you, Chair. The appointment of the director for the budget office, if this person reports to the Secretary of Parliament, the Secretary of Parliament would be within his rights to say, okay, from now on you report everything that you have investigated and that you must report on through me as the Secretary of Parliament. And in that process, information could be withheld from the committee because he will then work through the Secretary of Parliament. And that is not what the committees want, because we want the information to come directly to the committees. He doesn't report to, the director doesn't report to an individual, he reports to the committees, and he gives the advice to the committees that we require to make up our mind as to the appropriations and all the finances of the budget. It is the most important section or part of the whole governance system in South Africa, the budget. It is very important. And if the committee doesn't know exactly what is going on there, by direct access to that information, we could run into problems. So I would really say that I would recommend that we stay and stick with what we've got in this.
Mr. Galani and then Mr.
Chair, what you've just said is incorrect. In this law, there's nothing that says the Secretary of Parliament has the last say on this matter.
Finances, financial management.
Now, that's the one thing. Now, if that, I mean, you did say yourself earlier that this person accounts to Parliament. That's the bottom line. And clearly there is one accounting officer in this institution that accounts to Parliament, and that is the Secretary. Now, if you then are saying the Secretary would have the last say, etc., etc., but also from where I'm seated, the way I see from what was said earlier, it does appear that then the Secretary is only the channel to give funds to this person, and that's where it ends. And therefore this person then accounts to Parliament for the use of the funds, etc. And we think that is wrong. Secretary of Parliament is and should be the accounting officer, and therefore is the person that must have the power if you then say it just transfers funds to this person and so on, and yet this person must account to Parliament, but in the same breath you then say the Secretary would then have powers to withhold, etc. That also is not built here. Thank you.
Okay, just to clarify my point around the what Mr. Jenkins said, the transfer of money to the budget office, the secretary has to ensure that systems are in place. If the systems are in place, the secretary can transfer. He has the last say on the matter. That's the point. He can transfer the money if the systems are not in place. If political parties, for instance, don't bring account, I'm just using a different example now. If political parties don't bring audited financial statements to the Secretary of Parliament, the Secretary of Parliament can withdraw the transfer of funds to political parties. If those audited financial statements are not brought and the systems are not in place, because he's responsible for that function. But I take your point that the director, it says the subsection 11, which says the director must annually submit to Parliament a rolling 3-year budget in time for inclusion in Parliament's budget and report on the use of funds and the activities of the Parliamentary Budget Office. The next one will be Ms. Fass and then Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to put myself in a sort of realign my thinking here, because from what I understood about the report we adopted yesterday in the National Assembly, I think it was the oversight mechanism that was developed by Parliament itself, both houses of Parliament. And that effectively was done for two reasons, or three reasons. Yes, financial management and oversight over the executive, but also to underpin the separation constitutionally of the executive and the legislative body. And that to me, in terms of the oversight, was a very important point that the report made itself. In that vein, you see, Chairperson, what I'm looking at is what our previous speaker, who's now the Deputy President, tried so hard to do, and I think she has passed on that task to others, was to ensure that Parliament, that the actual status, constitutional status that exists for Parliament is restored, not simply in the Constitution as a book, but actually that it happens effectively. Parliament itself can no longer be seen as just something one can ignore. It must be seen to have authority. Otherwise, we must rewrite the Constitution, which we can, of course. We're allowed to do that, as long as we pass it with the constitutional majority. And when I look at this, I say to myself, well, if this is going to go to Parliament, and Parliament is simply going to say, that's all okay, was that the bill? That's fine. If that happens, then I totally agree with what is coming up here from some of our colleagues. I do. But if that is not what we're turning Parliament into, if Parliament is not a rubber stamp and takes this very seriously, because I looked at the one clause, I haven't had the opportunity of spending as much time as others on this. But one of the clauses here talk about presenting to Parliament the annual budget, 3-year budget, somewhere around here, and report on the use of those funds and the activities. Now you have to ask yourself, Parliament is not one house. It's two houses. Are we simply going to say, that's all okay, it's independent? Yes. And it goes to the NCOP? Yes. It's two houses of Parliament. It's not one house. And to me, that's very important. If one house of Parliament believes and has proof and evidence that there has been abuse of these funds, misuse in some way, not appropriate use, those funds will be amended and will have an impact through the Secretary of Parliament on the actual transfer. I don't believe for one minute we are expecting to have a parliament that's Yabru.
Okay, I think
I'll take two last input and we have to take a decision. You know, we'll be discussing first. And okay, Mr. Singh also. And then we'll have to take a decision on this matter. It's Mr. Jenkins, Mr. Boni, and the last one will be Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, for another opportunity. Just to clarify what I said earlier, if you've interpreted me correct, what we need to read the provision, the specific clause in the Financial Management of Parliament Bill, which says when there's a transfer made, I can't quote the exact words now, but when there's a transfer made, the Secretary must cut off those funds if there's a problem with their accounting systems. In fact, the Secretary must ensure that their accounting systems are valid and effective and so forth. So there's an issue there. So the Secretary can cut off the funds. Of course, that has huge implications. We will sit with the staff, I don't know how many staff will be in the budget office, that won't be able to pay until those issues have been resolved. Those issues usually percolate up through an audit report. Now there comes something. Who's going to audit these books? Is it going to be the Auditor General? We'll have to create policies for this budget office. Because the only comparison we have at this point in time with our parliament would be the transfer that is made of constituency funds and support funds to political parties. But the Auditor General doesn't play a role there to audit, so one must think about that. So there is an obligation on the Secretary to ensure that, but however, when it comes to accounting, of course the Secretary cannot do anything more than saying, well, I have transferred those funds, and because there was nothing that came from an audit report of the Budget Office, I didn't stop the fund. That is where the Secretary's accountability stops. The rest will fall squarely on the shoulders of the Director. And all the details there will have to be worked out, because the way I'm interpreting Parliament's financial bill at the moment, all those provisions about your annual report and what must be contained in your annual report doesn't pertain to money that you've transferred. That doesn't pertain to political parties. So just on an analogous basis, it won't pertain to the Budget Office. We'll have to create a separate set of rules and regulations for the financial accountability of the Budget Office, and there's certain issues that can come up from that. Thanks.
Okay, no, I think the point is taken, and we can deal with that. Mr. Sogoni and then Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, so I think that there is common to the Republic in terms of establishing this office. No one is opposed to that. However, I think that the issue that perhaps we seem not to agree on is the issue of the level at which this director will be appointed. You know, the more we speak here in the House, the more I really hear not what we want to convey. I mean, we say Mr. Jenkins has just clarified now that this office will be there, separate, independent, the Secretary has nothing to do with it. But we think that at the same time, the Secretary will still have, we would want the Secretary to have powers to withdraw when these funds are not properly used. But in this piece of legislation that we're creating today, we're saying this Secretary will have nothing to do with this person. This person cannot report to the Secretary. He must report to Parliament. What we say and what we're wishing to be saying perhaps in the legislation, it's not the same thing. That is my understanding. All that we say, let's do a legislation that all of us, that those, when we are not here, someone else is here. It should not people say, struggle people to interpret this. But we have difficulties in this house in interpreting it, because what we say and what we think that we want to see and what we have put, we're legislating here, is not the same. And the issue that colleagues are raising about our independence of Parliament, I'm not sure what we're talking about, because
what we're talking about here is that this office is the office of Parliament, and therefore it is the responsibility of this committee on oversight that will have the responsibility to do oversight with us. But we also seem to be doubting whether we will be able to do oversight. We want to transfer that responsibility to someone else. When we should be saying that the committees that will be responsible for oversight, and that is the issue that we raised with the FAFLA, that when you're talking about entities, we did raise the question, what entities are we talking about? Some of us were not aware at the time of what entities we're talking about and what kind of oversight was over those entities. Because if you're talking about entities that are established by departments, the PFMA then makes responsibilities, legislated that there should be oversight over them. Here, we're just wishing that things would happen, when we are legislating, and we have gone into so much detail, our employment should be done. But the important thing that we should be doing, we think that we're not doing it. And tomorrow then, if anyone, any other committee is here, or I mean, if any other secretary is here tomorrow, my colleague was saying, maybe we should just, the rules should not necessarily be directed to current or to incumbents, but just generally to say, we come up with principles, and our principles should be very clear, Chairperson. Whoever comes tomorrow, when you're no longer sitting in that chair, someone else is sitting there, must be very clear what is it that was intended to be done here. Is it something that does the law, our law, speak to what to the thinking of that? I think that's all that we're pleading for here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boni.
Thank you, Chair. I think we need to remember that the Secretary to Parliament is a functionary of Parliament. He's not somebody there with superpowers, whoever the Secretary is. This Director is going to be appointed on the recommendation of committees and things like that which are laid out here. This Director can be removed from office, and Clause 8 makes provision for that. If certain of the committees and the joint committees on finance and appropriations, each house, come up with a report to say, listen, this director is not doing his or her work properly, incompetent, etc., etc., etc. Those committees can recommend in terms of the legislation that we remove the director. So the question of funding, the fact that the Secretary of Parliament is funding, not Secretary of Parliament that's funding, he's just there in name. Parliament funds this office through the Secretary of Parliament. I don't think there's anything wrong with this clause here. We should proceed with it. And like I said earlier on, as we go along, if we find that there are any particular difficulties, because lots of laws have been changed, and even laws that we passed 5 years ago, we are amending, then we'll relook at it. But for now, I believe, Chair, that we should proceed with this. It gives some point of departure for how this office should be established and how the director should be appointed.
Ms. Margaret, the last word.
Just the three members. I want to remind ourselves that when we started with the process of this bill, we were in the Goodwood Chamber. I made a plea that we must remove personalities out of the process. I even said, tomorrow I may not be the chairperson, co-chairperson of the Joint Budget Committee, somebody else may be. And you must remove me out of this process as chairperson, remove me somewhere else. Remove the current secretary to Parliament, but deal with positions, responsibilities. What are these people going to do? Because if we associate the responsibilities to individuals, to personalities, that's where the problem will be. So I'm just reminding myself that please, let's remove personalities. Mr. Moloto tomorrow, maybe, after the election, if he comes back, he may be sitting over the not chairing. And the person, and he might be the Secretary of Parliament. He might be the Director of the Budget Office. Nobody knows. And I mean, he must make something that, yes, we will remove him. But he will know that actually he did something that that's good for Parliament. So I was just saying, member, please let us try to do that way. And I'm proposing that we go towards finalization of this bill. Yes, yeah, thanks.
It is made that we should deal with them, we should agree with the matter and move on. Mr. Johnson, is it something different from
No, no, sir. As I was moving out, I was told that tea is getting cold outside.
Yeah. No, the arguments are heated, and, but they will heat up the tea, don't worry.
They were saying, in fact, if you don't move out now, they're going to move the tea. So
okay. No, that's fine. We can deal with it. First, that's a proposal from Ms. Marie that we agree on this budget office as containing the bill and move on to the next issue. Okay. I think the next big issue is the norms and standards for provinces. I'm listening to Mr. Jenkins. My personal view is that the work that the NCOP has done on this matter is quite important, and my submission is that because it's providing guidance to provinces when they deal with money bills. I think that's, for me, I would submit that we should retain their proposal. Any other views? And Mr. Marais?
I'll just ask the question whether provinces or to what extent provinces were involved in this recommendation. But in principle, I would have no problem with your proposal.
Thank you. Involvement of provinces.
Honourable Chair, the provinces were involved insofar as their provincial delegates were part of the select committee. But it's a 75-foot. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this bill wasn't formally referred to the provinces for mandate. It's a 75-foot, so it doesn't have to be. But the delegates are sitting in the committee, so they might have informally briefed the provinces, which I'm not aware of.
Honourable members, I think the matter has been clarified. I've been informed that all committees do not. I'm reading what the committee secretary has written now. So don't say it my way. All committees do not have funds anymore. There's no more catering that we can order. Full stop. So members will have to proceed and march on. I think I can still see the strength in you. Members, I think they said we're done with the bill. I think we're basically done with the bill. I think let me just reiterate that the position. The position is that we agree on the long title, the insertion of the norms and standards, but all the matters referring to the date, we retain our original position, and the division of revenue, we retain our original position, the budget office, we retain our original position, and the norms and standards for provincial legislatures, where we adopt the proposal from the amendments from the NCOP. I think that's basically that, unless there's any other issue I've left out. One of the members, I'm advised that I should go clause by clause. I thought I summarized everything. So members, one, the long title, I think there's an agreement, agreed. Clause four, we said we are retaining the reference division of revenue bill. So we agree with the retention of clause four. Clause eight, on the dates, on all those three dates, all the dates that have been mentioned in clause eight, we are retaining. Clause nine, we are retaining clause nine. It's on the division of revenue bill. Clause 12, it's the date. We said we are retaining all the dates. Clause 15 is the budget office, where we are saying we are retaining.
And then the new clause is the norms and standards for provincial legislature, the amendment from NCOP, we said we are retaining. Agreed? Okay. No, we are agreeing with the amendment from NCOP. We are adding. Ms. Swart.
Chairperson, I just want to put one point forward. Are we also retaining, there was some view about the tautology of independence and the objective in on page 10, line 45. Which is to provide independent objectives.
Okay. And I'm trying to maintain consensus with the committee.
Okay,
so that's fine. There's no harm in repeating the same message at times. Okay, agreed. So, members, I think.
We're retaining the norm.
But I hope you have. Yeah. Okay. The Portfolio Committee on Finance, or the report of the Portfolio Committee on Finance on the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters, dated 18 February 2009. The Portfolio Committee on Finance has considered the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Bills and proposed amendments of the National Council of Provinces referred to the committee reports the bill with amendments. I hope it's in order. I see Mr. Jenkins shaking his head. The way it's worded, can I trust this man? Okay. Agreed? Okay. Thank you so much, members. I'm not sure whether you want to take a 5 minute break to stretch your legs and then we deal with the two reports. The report of the NA on the budget and then the budget committee on the budget. Your responsibility. Members, we have in front of us the report of the Portfolio Committee on Finance. I haven't read it, I must be honest. I would suggest that maybe we take some few minutes, 10 minutes to just to go through it quickly and take a decision.
Submissions that we've had and not the discussions from during that period, because there's things like the wage subsidy that was discussed but that doesn't appear at all in here. So it seems like that questions that was asked and where they responded to is not recorded. That's not supposed to be part of this report.
Yeah, I think we are raising a very critical matter which we need to think about it. The structure of our report. You're quite right. I mean, in some instances, we only record what the presenters have said to us, and we don't highlight some of the critical issues that were discussed. I think in our future reports, we need to come up with a different format of our report. I agree with you. Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if we are agreeing because it's one day to leave this place. All of us are agreeing with each other today. But I agree with both of you. I just wanted to make some general points about some omissions in the report. And I thought they were important issues that we had discussed as a committee. The one thing is the question of DORA. When we spoke about DORA, I think we did say, and one of the recommendations or suggestions was that the new committee, or whoever comes in, needs to have a full understanding of the principles that underlie DORA. That's something that is not here. And I think, but before that, the time for submissions, we've got to make a note that, you know, in the report, that the time given for submissions was limited due to unusual circumstances. I think that's the point we might have to make, because normally we give people a lot of time to respond and things. Then the other issue that I thought came up quite strongly was the question of SAA and the 1.6 billion.
Can we deal with that under recommendation?
Okay.
Note the recommendations, and then when you come under recommendation, we can then put that those issues under recommendation. Okay, can we start with page one? Any corrections? None. Page two.
Chair, just on macroeconomic outlook on the paragraph, the sentence starts with evidence of this is in the report published by IMF on the world economic outlook. Perhaps we need to also to be specific there, because there are many of those reports come by annual. If we could be specific, world economic report of 2009. I was just going through also on the footnotes there, the pages throughout, they talk about footnote 3, National Treasury, 209. To me, it doesn't say anything, whether that's the annual report or the, what is that?
Okay, Mr. Bedwa.
Thank you, Mr. Munoto. Mr. Johnson, that's with reference to page 2. The footnote is National Treasury 2009A. Now, in compiling the report, I've used three sources from National Treasury for 2009. That was the presentation, the budget review, as well as the budget speech. If you go to the references at the end of the document,
I see, it's in the reference. Yeah, no, it's clarified in the references. Okay, but the year, the World Economic Outlook uses the report, you have to put the year. Okay, let's move on. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5, 6.
I'm on page 4, Chair. I'm not sure whether we are expected to talk of any specific details when we are mentioning one of the issues raised. Saroga is going to become a member of OECD.
Yeah.
It just left.
No, I think we should say according to so and so, because it might not be a fact. I mean, I'm not sure whether that's true, but that's what one of the presenters said. So I think we should say according to so and so, and then I agree with you, because as it is written here, one can say that's a fact, that's what South Africa wants to be, and I'm not sure whether that's the situation. Ms. Phelps.
It's just on this page, but I noticed we've made great reference to the panelists. But I'm not sure, even when I got to the end of the report, whether we agreed with them or not. I mean, I'm just looking at the bottom here with Loebscher, where he's made a number of references, which goes on to the next page. But nowhere there does it indicate that the committee shared that view. So it's just a broad comment.
Well, I think it goes back to the issue that has been raised by Mr. Mavere. You know, all we're doing here is capture what people have said, and we are not expressing our own opinion. I think that's the biggest challenge, and in future we might have to think about a different structure and say, by the way, which might be difficult because the DA and the ANC are not agree on the same That's why and that view from Secretary, just to reflect what was discussed, because we might not agree on that view. Let's move on. Page 6.
Page 5.
Page 5.
Last paragraph there. International flows to South Africa were on the positive side in the for the first time since mid 2009. Fedusa is of the opinion that the commodity prices are expected to remain high. If you could say something, because I mean the commodity prices they have since been dropping. I'm not sure whether what we mean by that.
Well, Mr. Redbull.
Just the testimony there on lobster. Lobster pointed out that during January 2009, international capital flows to South Africa were on the positive side for the first time since mid 2008.
I think that's dealt with. The issue of commodity prices, again, is the view of Fedusa. I'm not sure whether they express that, but that's their view, and it might, like I'm saying, we need to attribute sentiment to certain people, because then they become the view of the committee, and those things might not be effective, and they might later be proved to be incorrect. Okay, let's move on. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8, 9, 10, Dr. George.
Thank you, Chief. In the second last paragraph, the last sentence, says the structural balance remained in negative territory, i.e. a deficit. I don't think we need to have such a long sentence, maybe just say the structural balance remained in deficit. Because, you know, we don't need the rest. Thanks, Jim.
Did you capture that, Mr. Wood? Okay. Page 11? Twelve, 13, 14, 15. Dr. George?
Thanks, Chair. I remember quite clearly that Professor Mulaji mentioned the complexity of the South African tax system. So I think we haven't actually captured it in here somewhere, but I think that is quite an important point that was made. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Mr. Redbull, can you do something about it? And also note that he acknowledged that there's a simplification process that's about to be undertaken, I think 2010, when they are rewriting the tax legislation, the Income Tax Act. Okay. Page 16. Seventeen. 18. 19, and then the recommendations. Okay, Mr. Mahe and Dr. George.
Just on page 19, Chair, the last paragraph where it says that, you know, the last, or the second last sentence, South Africa's growth forecast remains in line with that of emerging economies. I think there was a discussion on comparable emerging economies, because we have, in the discussion it came out that India and China is much higher, and then you've got other comparable emerging economies like Mexico, Chile, Korea, some of those that is comparable to emerging markets. So we must maybe just add that word in.
Comparable.
Yeah.
Dr. George?
Thanks, Chair. On page 18 on the table, on the tax proposals on the left-hand side, it says these contributions are deductible by the employer. General accepting accounting practice. I think it should read generally acceptable accounting practice.
Yeah.
You're correct. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much. Ms. Rott?
Introduce prudent macroeconomic management to meet its various objectives. The reality is there isn't a party in this House that disagrees with the fact that prudent macroeconomics have been here for years now. There's been no sudden introduction. It's been here. It was introduced 5 years or 7 years ago. So I think the word introduce should be out, and we should rather say that government needs to maintain. And just one tiny little other one was on page 13. Bursa regards, the third paragraph after the dot for the bullet, says specifically, Bursa is particularly supportive. I just think there's a bit too much specifics and particulars there. If we can just smooth out the sentence a little bit, Chair, then I'm fine.
Can we come to recommendations for Dr. Jones?
Thanks, Chair. On page 19, under the conclusion, the sentence after the one that Ms. Fox has been talking about.
Ms. Fox, switch off yours.
Okay. It says, in light of the current global slowdown, the 2019 budget balance becomes negative. I think maybe it would be better to say falls into deficit. That's the third sentence. As before.
Which? 19. Which paragraph?
Under conclusion.
Oh, under conclusion, okay. Becomes negative. So you
say... Instead of saying that, saying falls into deficit.
Oh, falls into deficit. Okay. Okay, that's fine. Mr. Johnson?
Small one, Chair. That's the... As part of our report writing practice, you have the Mr. So-and-so from this, Mr. So-and-so from that. If you could also be consistent throughout, wherein we don't say Mula, we don't say Lobsha, you know, we will be tempted, you know, thing and money. Perhaps if you could just be consistent, Mr. Miss, you know, like you are saying, you know, the minister, you know. Maybe you might wish to say the economist, I don't know. Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much. Can we come to recommendations? Mr. Singh?
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. Yeah, one of the things I thought we should include in the report is the time, you know, for submission.
Okay.
Then the other general points I've got, I'm just going to mention all, and I don't know how we're going to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought instead of it only being in recommendations, it also should be in the preface. We should say something about it, because we said a lot about SAA and the 1.6, and I think everybody was concerned on all sides of the House about this money.
Mm-hmm.
And although the Minister tried to explain, I think one of the things we said that SAA needs to give us very detailed, you know, plans and things like that. Not only, I know they have public enterprises today saying something, but I think as finance, we also need to have some kind of a briefing. So that's one general point. The second point is on DORA and the FFC recommendation. If we remember, the FFC did indicate to us that they didn't have time. They were reasonably satisfied with the way things were done, but they needed more time. And they made certain other recommendations, which I think we have to take note of. the FFC recommendations. Then the other point was on the transport, subsidization of transport and the way that it's being handled. And I think we did hear from Sandro, I think, that they were looking at a new system. But even there, I mean, the Department of Transport seems just to be failing in managing this whole subsidization thing. And maybe they need to come before us at some time and tell us how they go about this too, with the Portfolio Committee on Transport. You know, it must be a joint briefing. And then the last one was raised by a colleague, I think it was Johnson, on the Msumbolo Fund and the amount being allocated, whilst we know that it's going to be the NDA. And maybe we need to say something about it as, you know, what they said. So those were just four or five general points that I thought we should somehow or the other bring into the report as a view of the Finance Committee on those particular issues.
Thank you, Chair. Just the first point on that South African Airways issue, I think it was also clear made by the Minister that we should, you know, they should come and explain to us. So maybe, you know, it could be part of the recommendations that they come and explain to us about these things that the Minister obviously find it very difficult to again try to explain on their behalf. That's the first thing. Chair, and then the we made the questions about the wage subsidy, the possibility of a wage subsidy, that it seems like an omission by Treasury, by the admittance of the Minister that it was in part of his speech last year, but it seems like it has fallen off the radar this year, and it was indicated to him that, you know, if you snooze, you lose, so maybe it must be recommended that we revisit that. Then there was also discussions around our clear indication of the lack of ability of the export market to capitalize on lower rand value and the potential to really bring us foreign currency in. And he's indicated that we must look and see how we can revive that or whether that can be discussed. So somewhere we will bring that in. The other thing that he has also mentioned is that recommendation of Parliament must review all expenditures. So that, you know, that basically, I don't know if it's a zero-based budgeting that must be done, but that there must be explanation about, you know, how they do expenditure. And that comes from the budget speech as well, that we have also said that is a good thing.
Members, any other? I know it's a very unsatisfactory process that we have to deal with. Any other issue? Our fate is going to be placed in Mr. Vadboy's hands, that he would capture this thing and express the views of this committee. Mr. Johnson.
Okay, maybe that's a point raised by Mr. Singh. I was going to say that national treasury or any accounting structure must update Parliament on the usage of on the breakdown and also on the usage and the performance of the 1 billion rand towards Msumbolo Youth Fund, given the processes that are underway, because ideally you would have been expecting a situation wherein there is no such a commitment. If it is there, maybe if it is directed to a specific program, and that was not unpacked, unfortunately, without saying much, but something along those lines.
The boy, our fate is in your hands. Because all we're doing is to recommend that the next parliament should attend to this matter. Because you gentlemen might be here, or you might not be here. depending on the wish and then well, let it assume they
the all
day. I think those are the issues. Do we agree with the report?
Yes.
Thank you so much. I'll hand over to my co-chair.
Thanks, Mr. Malato and Mr. Tamare. Okay. Thank you for switching off. Members, let's look at the quarterly report of the Budget Committee. The quarterly report.